Good evening. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
And this is the holiday celebrating the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We did not have a show today at noon because of NPR's live coverage of the inauguration.
Mm-hmm. So this evening we are going to take some time to focus on the holiday by, I guess, reflecting and looking back at some stories that we've done in the recent past about people providing service in the community.
Because the idea behind this holiday is, yes.
Service.
Right. Not a day off, but a day on.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to begin with a story that, Christina, you filed not too long ago. You went all the way to Boonville for this story.
I did. The Boonville Human Development Center is in Boonville, and it serves disabled, mentally disabled members of the community there. And they have this really cool project. It's a rugs project. And they actually, these clients make and weave rugs out of recycled sock loops. So it's part of socks. And then they sell them to the community. And they actually even travel up here and sell them at local craft fairs. And last year, they made over 600 rugs.
And so you went to Boonville?
I did.
Just a few months ago.
I did, yeah. In the year 1910, a steel banner connected two large rock posts at the bottom of a drive. It read, Arkansas Tuberculosis Sanatorium. Back then, there was no cure for TB, and passing through this gate was a death sentence. Between 1910 and the early 1970s, over 70,000 patients moved through these brown, native rock columns. Patients were kept isolated from the rest of society. This Boonville location was ideal because it was up in the hilly woods. The sanatorium ran like a mini-city, complete with a hospital, fire department, freestanding homes, and a school.
This building was built by the Masons in Arkansas.
That's John Carter, a residential services manager for the Boonville Human Development Center, or the BHDC.
To house the children on the tuberculosis sanatorium grounds. So this was a school for children. You'll see a stage in the weaving room where they would have school plays and things like that. So this was a very interesting building and with a lot of history, I think.
When a cure for TB was found in the early 1970s, the sanatorium closed. It didn't take long for the BHDC to find a use for the property, moving in their first patient in 1972. The location now serves as a home and training facility for developmentally disabled adults, one in five state-run centers in Arkansas. Debbie Hill is a rehabilitation instructor supervisor.
It's just providing ways to help them grow and become as much as they can be, no matter whatever the disability might be.
Disabilities include various developmental issues and psychological, including bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. Patients or clients come here for a variety of reasons. Perhaps their behavioral issues are too difficult for families to handle, or the families themselves are aging and are no longer physically able to care for their loved ones. Debbie has been with BHDC for 25 years, though when she started as a temporary teaching assistant, she thought she'd only be here 6 months. She says she got hooked on the clients.
And 25 years later, I'm going, why am I still here? And they're why I'm still here. Because I do enjoy working with them. I mean, any time it can be stressful or it can be a little tense and stuff, but overall, they're a lot of fun. They're great people. I enjoy working with them. I used to make the mistake of saying anybody could work here. You know, I mean, it's a piece of cake. Anybody could work here, but not everybody can and not everybody should.
Debbie now works in the Masonic building we mentioned earlier. It is in this former school building where the Rugs Project takes place, a pre-vocational training program the BDHC has been doing for 30 years. About 35 clients work here Monday through Friday. They have a literal job to do, making rugs.
It's not necessarily a job per se that they can go out in the community and do, but it's learning how to work with others. It's learning how to get along. This may not be your best friend, but I have to work with them and I have to show them respect as they show me respect. Learning how to do a task and to follow through and to stay on task, you know, during that work period and knowing when to take your breaks and things. So all part of it is kind of work ethics that you need to learn in order to have a job outside of this facility.
The rugs they make here are pretty nice, sold to the public. More on that in a bit. They are made from loopers, as Debbie calls them. She had to explain further. When the toe of a sock is sewn together, there is excess fabric that has to be cut off. The result is a sock loop, a circle of material about 2 inches long. A sock factory in Fort Payne, Alabama, gives them to the BHDC Rugs Project. They only have to pay for the shipping. There are many steps involved in rug making. Clients receive individualized care and attention to find which job is right for them.
We sit down, we give one-on-one instruction on how to do a task, and then we back off and kind of let them do it. And we set the objective based on, are they easily distracted? You know, is it maybe just staying attentive, you know, staying on task? And we'll work on those things, things that will help them develop longer period of times of being able to focus on what they're doing at the moment. We help them also by, you know, we might try and take away some of the distractions. If they're distracted and look out a window, maybe we could move their workspace a little way. So we find different ways that will help them be successful. But we base it on what they can already do. And then we sit down and we show them and help teach them how to do the things that we want them to do.
Groups of workers are set up in the former classrooms. The BHDC also does recycling, picking up paper and cardboard from local schools. So some clients are tearing and sorting magazines. In one classroom, others are sorting the loopers, picking the bad ones out. They get paid for the work that they do, paid by the pound of sock loops they sort. Today, they are working with nylon loops, like from pantyhose. Other workers are tying the loops together to form long chains. Debbie explains.
And he's double tying. Because of it being nylon, it's kind of thin. And so we figured with double tie, then we'd have a much thicker and it'd be easier to weave and make a much nicer rug.
So it has two loops put together.
Yeah.
Instead of one.
So he takes two loops at a time and loops them and ties them into the other one, makes a long chain, and then rolls that up into a ball so that it can go to the weavers, and then they weave it. And so we'll show you how to do that here in a little bit. But they're cleaning and sorting loops right now, and he's tearing paper for the recycling.
We move to a room across the hall. While the nylon loops are all white, they also make colorful chains, resulting in colorful rugs. The staff dye the sock loops to make a rainbow of circles. Sometimes the workers like to make their own patterns when tying loops into a chain, causing the pattern of a rug to be a bit off. To make sure there's an even distribution of color, the staff lay out colored loops in boxes on a circular table. Workers go around the table, picking up a loop from each box, stacking it on a stick.
So when he gets a stick, and these are the old wood slats off of the wood blinds that used to be here when it was a sanatorium. We found a good use for the wood slats, so we take them and we use them then for sticks for them to stack the colored loops on. That way they can keep them in order.
Workers then take the loops from the stick and tie them into the chains. When it's a good sized chain, it's rolled into a ball and taken into the weaving room. Not everyone is a weaver. It takes some serious skill. Only 8 out of 35 weave. I was somewhat shocked to see that they use full-sized looms. About 8 light-colored wooden ones are set up in one half of a large, light room. They face a stage. That's back wall is painted with a bright and colorful animal mural. One of the weavers took the time to show me how a rug is made.
What's your name?
I'm Chrissy.
Chrissy, my name's Christina.
That's a pretty name.
It's close.
All right, this is the stick, and you put the colors on here and everything, and then you go and you go and put it through like this, and then you do like that, and then you you change feet and stuff, and you go.
Chrissy
like
is moving
again,
a boat of sorts in between two rows of string. When the chain gets to the other side, she pulls back on an arm, securing the sock rope to the ones before it. Moving her feet on pedals flips the string so that she can move her colorful chain back through to the other side. And the process continues until the rug is the appropriate size. Staff members finish the edges. Of course, you can buy rugs at the BHDC, but you can also get one at one of the many craft fairs in the region. Staff take the rugs and set up shop at places like Spanker Creek and Bella Vista, bringing in over $8,000 just last month. It helps to fund the Rugs Project and to pay the workers. These rugs are popular. They get custom orders, and I've had two on my kitchen floor for the last year.
And, of course, they get excited, and when they hear all the praise about their rugs, they like being told what a good job they do and how many rugs we sell. They all go around with puffed-up chests, you know, all right. But it makes it nice for them to know they are capable of making something that other people want and are willing to pay for and buy, you know, and so that's encouraging for them.
Another weaver, Harold, was willing to talk to me.
Do you like your job now?
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
I love it.
And this is Ozarks at Large, and today, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we are taking some time to look back at some stories that we've done that focus on people providing service to the community. The interior of the once drab cement block Women's Community Correction Center in downtown Fayetteville is becoming a sort of art museum due to the effort of its nonviolent female residents. Over the past several years, they've collaborated on painting elaborate murals with the help of local arts volunteers and donated household paints. The project provides both therapy and encouragement for the women, some incarcerated for as long as 2 years. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has more.
100 women are imprisoned at the Northwest Arkansas Community Correction Center in downtown Fayetteville. And they're called residents, by the way, not inmates, says Assistant Center Supervisor Gary Tabor.
We are what they call a modified therapeutic community, and we house females.
So offenses like forgery, theft of property, and illegal drug use mostly. Average stay, around a year, but residents can be released early if they succeed in treatment. The two-building complex used to serve as the Washington County Jail until it was converted back in 2008. Much of the interior was repaired and freshly painted cream colors. But soon after they settled in, one of the staff who has art training saw an opportunity and requested permission to paint a mural of the downtown Fayetteville Square circa 1950.
They took a panoramic picture of the square and made it life-size.
The hallways filled with accurate renderings of mid-20th century Ozarks shops, a treasure trove of colorful primitive artworks which few on the outside will ever have an opportunity to see. Nancy Stanberry's treatment coordinator.
It would be like you were actually walking down the sidewalk on the square looking into the shop windows.
At shelves filled with 1950s dry goods and sundries, a bakery stuffed with frosted cakes and donuts, the old Red Cross drugstore, and the Bank of Fayetteville, which still stands on the square. Down the hall, you'll see a pet store, a shoe store, and other businesses, some named after staff. The hallways are also crowded with residents, standing in groups of three and four, and all are on task, heading to the prison laundry or on cleaning or kitchen crew. Two women who've committed some sort of infraction sit on the glazed concrete floor, heads down, polishing the surface with bits of gauze. And just a glance by certain staff will cause residents to quickly move out of sight. The days are highly structured here, Mr. Tabor says.
They spend half the day in treatment. They have individual counseling, they have group counseling, they have life skills. They spend half the day on job structure. They work in the kitchen, the laundry, cleaning crews, unless they don't have their GED, and then they're mandated to go to the GED classes.
But women have to apply to be a mural crew and submit sample art, says prison staff member Carla Kelly. She's the trained commercial artist who initiated the mural project, choosing the imagery and guiding the painters on technique and composition. And she's clearly a fine teacher. The outcome is just astonishing.
For the most part, most of these ladies haven't done anything more than doodle since high school, or didn't know they had a talent. So sometimes you help them with perspective or understanding the color depth, things like that, and you watch the light bulb go off when they start getting this.
The images are taken from photographs and sketched on the wall first, then brushed, using only house paints. One back hall is filled with framed vignettes of popular Northwest Arkansas landmarks, Old Main, Razorback Stadium, Prairie Grove, Battlefield Park, the Basin Park Hotel in Eureka Springs, Montanay, and Devil's Den, complete with bats. But for many, these are also images of home.
When they leave, we actually get to give them a colored print of the murals that they have done because the rest of the world can't see this art.
Which makes it a real privilege to tour this facility. we step into the law library for a moment, which is empty except for an old computer, surrounded floor to ceiling with stacks of hand-painted books, some with very funny titles.
We have The Virtues of Dr. Pepper by Mr. Tabor. Are you a Dr. Pepper drinker?
Yes, ma'am.
We've got Forgery for Dummies back here. You name it.
One row of books are titled after the 20 original residents of this place, long integrated back into society. Across from the stacks is a painting of a roaring fireplace where you can pretend warm your hands. Down the hall, we finally meet the famous mural crew, who are busy stippling a large green Christmas tree on paper with sponges. It will hang in the lobby, covered in paper ornaments. Kayla Wilkes is from Fayetteville.
My experience with the mural crew has been amazing. It's definitely been a good outlet. It helped me learn a lot of things, as well as a way to escape from the normal everyday life here. It's been very uplifting, and the people that I work with, that we share a lot of the common qualities and things that we want in life. So it's been pretty awesome.
Hello, my name is Christine Branson. I'm from Rogers, Arkansas. I knew I could do art, but I didn't think that I was that good at it. But being on murals, it's helped with my confidence. It's helped me a lot being. Just when I come to work, I can relax and not be so stressed out during the day, and it's a relief.
And Raven Posey's from Mansfield. She's never painted before.
It's helped me be proud of myself, and that's something that I've always had trouble with, and be proud of my work, and to have others be proud of my work, and to hear, you know, how well I'm doing. It really helps with the treatment here, you know, with myself. It's also a really good coping skill, I guess, you know, because it's hard to be away from family and home and everything. So to be able to come in here and paint beautiful pictures and kind of escape from the whole walls and everything, it helps so much, and it helps to relax me and cope with, you know, a lot of things that I deal with inside. So I've really, really enjoyed it, and it's a blessing, truly.
My name is Julia Wilson. I'm from Rogers also. I'm the newest one on the murals crew. I've just been here for about 3 days. I haven't got to really get into the painting yet, but I have got to draw some, and I love it. I love it here. I love all the paintings the ladies do for us that have done on the walls.
Through women experience and learn discipline, but also get deep connection with each other and with staff.
My name is Kim. I'm from Rogers, Arkansas, and I think we all have an epiphany after you've been here a certain length of time. I think you have to make the program work for you.
Treatment coordinator Nancy Stambier says the therapy here is 24/7, conducted by all 37 staff in some capacity.
Each staff member here, whether you're security staff or kitchen staff or a counselor, is responsible for treatment and being part of the therapeutic community, therapeutic family.
And many also get drug and alcohol treatment. In fact, down the stairs to the kitchen and dining hall hang murals of each of the 12 steps to recovery. Mr. Deal, the center's maintenance supervisor, along with Mr. Glover, constructed frames for each 12-step mural and many other of the mural images here. There's even a faux banister. Downstairs in the dining hall and kitchen area are planned murals that will feature a farmer's market and cafe.
Hi.
It's only 1 p.m. and already kitchen crews working on tonight's supper, some Italian cuisine by their fragrance. A culinary chef on staff teaches the women the fine art of cuisine. And down the hall from here in another wing, someday we'll hang murals based on Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art masterworks. All this painting may actually help women overcome rigid self-defense survival mechanisms. According to initial studies on the effectiveness of art therapy on prison populations, it's shown to relieve depression and cultivate self-control. Working in collaboration can also build self-esteem and cooperation. The Fayetteville Correction Center is the only one in the state which offers such intensive art programming. The Arkansas Department of Community Corrections operates 5 facilities around the state, 2 for women, 3 for men. Rhonda Sharp, spokesperson, says all offer some form of therapy.
Well, I think our statistics speak best of how effective the program is. For
our community correction centers, we have a recidivism rate of just 26.4%. That means of the people who go through one of our centers and its programming are more likely to stay in their community doing what they're supposed to be doing.
As compared to conventional prison, which is significantly higher, Rhonda Sharp says. But she and other personnel are also seeing how interior muraling clearly lifts spirits.
They took what was a former jail and they've turned it into a really lovely facility.
And change likely happens more at a lovely facility. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
That story first aired in the winter of 2011. By the way, the public is not allowed inside the Women's Correction Facility to view the murals, but you can catch a glimpse on a CBS affiliate report with residents talking about their murals. It was filmed last fall, and it's posted on 5newsonline.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday. We did not have a show at noon today because of the inauguration of President Obama, but we're taking some time during this hour to listen again to some stories about service to the community in honor of the holiday. And Antoinette, a story that you had wanted to do for some time, and you did, I think, late summer, early fall?
Late summer.
Okay.
everything starts to blend together a while. Lifestyles Incorporated, it's a nonprofit organization in the area that has provided quality services to individuals with disabilities since 1976. They have different, branches, I guess, in the community, different things that they do. They have a whole art program and things like that. But one of the interesting things that they have is a car wash in Rogers. Now, the car wash has been there as long as I can remember, but it came under their ownership more recently. It was given to them. And so they were trying to figure out a way to use it to their advantage. And it's actually sort of a job training site for some of the organization's clients. So earlier last summer when they were remodeling the car wash, I stopped by and talked to some people about what they did.
At the Lifestyles Car Wash in Rogers, there are multiple options for getting your vehicle to sparkle. In addition to a drive-through car wash, there are several hands-on cleaning options. Attendants can use air to clean your floor mats or vacuum crumbs from your last fast food excursion off the carpet. Or if you prefer motoring around town on two wheels, they can spray off your motorcycle with a water hose. While you wait for your vehicle of choice to be washed or detailed, you can sit inside the green building that from the outside looks like a typical house with a front porch and a garage. Inside the lobby, you can watch television or peruse the art gallery. That's right, this car wash has an art gallery, which displays work created by clients of Lifestyles Incorporated, a nonprofit organization that has served individuals with disabilities since 1976. The location has been home to a car wash for several years, but in 2009, the former owners gave the business to the nonprofit group. Jennifer Maynard, executive director of Lifestyles Incorporated, explains that after receiving the gift, they had to decide what to do with it.
Carol Hart, our founder, can see opportunities in things that other people just normally wouldn't, and she saw it as a great opportunity as a training site for employment. And so what we've developed there is it's a full service car wash and detail center, and we almost all the people we serve really want to be employed. They want to work in the community, not somewhere where it's just people with disabilities. They want to work. We all like working with a bunch of different kinds of folks, and we had some folks that just for different reasons had not been successful in long-term employment in the community. And so what she saw this as was an opportunity for folks to be in a real business, but it was a safe place to make mistakes. So it's not like, they were hired somewhere and they had a supervisor that didn't really know them. And, so if they were upset about something or they were late for some reason, that they wouldn't immediately be written up or fired. That this gave an opportunity for if someone's never had a boss telling them what to do or has had a boss telling them what to do and didn't like it very much, it's an okay place to learn and to grow into those positions. So they're learning customer service and the high quality of work and being on time and looking good and all of those different skills, being part of a team. So it's worked out extremely well.
The staff of the car wash consists of crew members who worked at the car wash for years before it was owned by Lifestyles, as well as clients of the nonprofit who work as trainees. Kyle Dempsey has been the general manager of the car wash since January, and he has been working with people with intellectual disabilities since he was about 17. Kyle says he had a brother who was disabled, and when he heard about Lifestyles, he decided that was an organization he wanted to become involved with.
We have anywhere from 4 to 5 trainees that come in every day. It's kind of on a rotating schedule. They have set days that they work, but we have different people every day. Some of them work 3-4 days a week. Some of them work 2 days a week. It just kind of depends on their schedule and how we can manage to fit them into the schedule here. They come in and they have a job coach with them. The job coach will usually teach an hour of class in the morning. It's kind of going over stuff that they're going to see throughout the day, like just different customer service situations, what to do and if this happens and that sort of thing. And then they come up here and, they get to work, hands-on with our other staff. And I guess after that, they go back and they have another hour class where they sit and they talk about the things that happen throughout the day, ways to improve on these things. And I think that plays a real beneficial role in the whole operation of the training that we do. Because, they can see it and, they may not notice that, something was wrong when they did something. And so that teaching plays a very vital part in the training that we provide here.
By working at the training site, trainees can put the experience they gained at the car wash on their resume. Executive Director Jennifer Maynard explains that if a job on the staff becomes available, trainees are able to apply for the position just like anyone else. She says what has happened in several cases is trainees have been able to find employment in the community.
We were talking about a fellow that he's in his 40s. He has not had long-term successful employment. He was not real motivated to have employment, volunteered some, but wasn't, even with his volunteer position, wasn't that dedicated to it. And he has been at the car wash as a trainee probably just over a year, maybe a little bit longer, and he just got a job at McDonald's, and he is so proud of that. It's just building him up and, having the satisfaction of getting that paycheck, and, he knows that he's graduated from that and he's moved on, so it's great to see him when he gets his paycheck because he is extremely proud of that.
The Lifestyles Car Wash is a full-service car wash that's open from 8:30 to 5 Monday through Saturday. General Manager Kyle Dempsey says there are a number of packages customers can choose from.
We have packages that are exterior only, just get the outside done. Those range, there's 3 of them that range anywhere from 8 to 12. And then we have our inside and out packages, our full-service washes that range anywhere from, I believe, $15.49 all the way up to $29.99. We also offer a full-service detail center where we do detail work, shampooing carpets, cleaning seats, the whole 9 yards, the inch-by-inch type clean. And those range anywhere from $31.99 for the individual details all the way up to $139, $159 for different, full-service detail, full detail packages.
Over the past few months, patrons may have noticed some renovations happening at the car wash, which will be hosting its grand reopening Thursday through Saturday. Executive Director Jennifer Maynard explains part of the renovation included a new coat of paint to make the business a much warmer, friendlier place.
We're also we're changing the seating. We'll still have one part of the lobby where we'll have a TV, and it's usually on CNN or ESPN. And then the art gallery area has been pretty congested, and so we're going to open that up, and that's going to be additional seating. And we're going to have, that folks can sit and look. It's going to be set more like a gallery as opposed to a store. Things are will still be available for purchase, but just not as much. And it won't be, so we have more space for the customers to be seated. And then we are revamping our coffee area, so it's not going to be just a stale cup of coffee, which is what, you know, most people anticipate when they go into a car wash or to get their oil change, things like that. So we're going to have some new additions there as well.
So we just more of a coffee shop feel.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's exactly what we're going for. And we just, you know, when you're having your car, you know, washed, where you're getting, you know, a towel dry and, you know, somebody's vacuuming and doing the windows and all that, you know, it can take 20 or 30 minutes. So we want the customers to be as comfortable as possible while they're in there. And we do have Wi-Fi. We advertise that. So, you know, we want folks to know if you're running in on your lunch hour or going to go in before you go to work in the mornings, that you can still get some stuff done while you're there.
The art Jennifer mentioned includes items like gift cards, paintings, ceramics, and jewelry created by participants in Lifestyle's College for Living art classes. Jennifer says half of the proceeds from art sales goes to the artists, and the other half goes to support the nonprofit's art program. Jennifer says Lifestyles began offering art classes 7 or 8 years ago. They had one instructor teaching 4 hours of art in one small classroom that was also used for educational classes. Today, Jennifer says they have a fabulous, fully functioning art studio at the Blair Center for Visual Arts in Springdale, where they now offer not 4, but 40 hours a week of art classes.
Art has taken off like we never dreamed. One of the things, we visited a couple of other places out of state that had similar programs, and the thing they said you cannot skimp on are the art teachers, that you have to hire professional artists. You can't hire somebody who just likes art, or special ed teachers or administrative folks. You've got to have artists teaching, and that's probably the smartest thing we did. We followed that advice, and just to see how far the artists have come is phenomenal. It's from, you know, strictly acrylic paintings, mostly abstract, to now they're working with all kinds of fabrics and textiles and creating three-dimensional collages, and it's just outstanding. We have a show every month somewhere, and our artists are really being recognized for how gifted a lot of them are. You know, just like if you took any other group of people, some just are not very good. I'd be one of those if I were taking any kind of artistic class. But I mean, we have some folks that truly are just gifted and talented. So that we take every opportunity we can to get their work out. Sam's Club has let us put our art in the company employee store at their main office headquarters, and then we also have the presence in the car wash, which I'm sure to folks seems odd when they come in, but it's just so us. It just suits us perfectly that, you know, we would have a gallery and a car wash. So
that story first aired last year on Ozarks at Large. We are listening again to some of stories that we've aired in the past year or so about service to the community. It's in honor of this Martin Luther King Jr. Holiday. And I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Yasmin Grajeda.
Another story from car wash now to bicycles.
Yes.
Both Fayetteville and Bentonville's communities have embraced bicycle education in the public schools.
Which is great.
It is. The Bentonville School District received a grant in 2012 for bicycle education, and Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis had this story last year about how that program worked.
Well, we were able to buy 540 bikes, 30 for each school, a classroom set for each school. And we'll start with every elementary, and third and fourth grade will have it, and they will ride a committed amount of 40 hours of biking a year at least, or they could do more. And then the middle school will also have it, and have larger bikes for those kids. And they also have to learn bike safety. That would be part of the program, bike etiquette, and trail etiquette, and about the trails. We even wrote our own manual, and the Bentonville Parks Department helped us with the manual. And then so did the Ozark Bike Coalition helped us. It has all the new Razorback Greenway trails, and they have maps of each trail, and they have pictures of the art for Crystal Bridges Trail. And they'll learn about the different trails and how to ride to school more, so their parents have to drive less. And anyway, they'll learn the right hand signals and how to stop and how to look, how to pass. And then junior high will also have a set of bikes,
And then the new junior high will even have a set of bikes. And then the high school will have it through their intramural program so that there'll be mountain biking for girls and mountain biking for boys. There'll be co-ed mountain biking. So those will be intramural things that we're offering for our large high school.
Where did the idea for this program come from?
Well, kind of me. I like bikes, and, you know, when you do a lot of research on Arkansas, American League of Bicyclists ranked us the 50th least friendly bike state, and that bothered me. And the rankings of obesity bother me. And then we have a wonderful school foundation here who had given a set of bikes already to Lincoln Junior High, and we've seen the kids ride them every day and just loving it and feeling great about it. And then my husband just retired from working for the International Olympics in the sport of triathlon, and he is now the outreach director for Bike Bentonville. So he's into the bikes, and with all the new trails here in Bentonville and the Razorback Greenway, it just makes sense to use the trails as an outside classroom.
So this is kind of a personal mission for you then?
Well, sort of. I'm an avid cyclist myself and runner and triathlete type person, and it's just meant a lot to me in my life, and it's non-generational. You know, we have the bikes here in a warehouse now, and we're putting them together on the weekends with lots of volunteer help and Fat Tire mechanics, because the bikes came from Fat Tire. They're Trek bikes. They're really nice bikes, aluminum frames with disc wheels. They're really fine quality, and we've had people from the Bella Vista Bicycling Club, and many seniors have come in and helped put hours of putting the bikes together with the mechanics and helping us get them all for this kickoff that we're having on December 3rd in our athletic complex.
You mentioned this program is eventually going to be for students from elementary school through junior high.
Right, and then with our high school being so large, it was hard to incorporate it and saturate the PE department with it. And we have a collegiate level intramural program with an intramural coordinator that we started a year ago, so it fits in really better with our intramural program in the high school.
But even through elementary through junior high, it seems like that's a lot of bikes to get. Has the school district had partners in getting this
equipment? Oh, yes.
We
got a Walton Family Foundation grant, and then we had a percentage of matching funds that were from Coca-Cola, and then our Bentonville Schools Foundation helped. And then Walmart Visitor Center helped. So all those financial streams combined gave us enough financial support. And then Fat Tire Bike also worked with Trek to get a huge discount on the bikes and to get them where they were more affordable. And then we even found out that the Trek corporate office is sending their own national PR people to come to our event. So we're real excited.
Now, you've mentioned this event a couple times. What exactly is going to be happening at this December 3rd kickoff event?
Well, it's going to be fun because, you know, the athletic complex is an indoor football field. So we're going to put all 540 bikes on the field, and we're going to have 30 students from each school stand by the bikes with the principals and the PE teacher and have one big group picture of the, because so far in the research I've done, and I could be wrong and just missed it, I know that some of our neighboring districts do some biking in the schools, but I haven't found one district that has saturated it in every school and actually made it a real curriculum piece where there's different safety rules and things that are taught. And we had a historian from Rogers Historical Museum actually figured out the history of each trail. Like a slaughter pen used to be a pig slaughtering house, and Mobley Trail was from the apple orchards of the Mobley Farm. And so we're even going to teach history while they're on the bike. So anyway, but back to the event. Sorry, I get so excited. I talk about the whole gamut. But all the people that help support it, Coca-Cola and different companies will come and celebrate watching the kids, and we'll have photo ops with our board and the board foundation, and then the kids are going to ride their bikes back to the school, so that'd be a lot of fun.
Getting the bikes is one thing, but maintaining them is another entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we worked that out too. So we have a gateway program where students that find the high school conformity challenging, and through the Arkansas Career Education Department, we started a entrepreneur bike shop program. So we actually have a bike shop in our high school, and 15 of the students there are getting to be trained bike mechanics, so they will actually maintain the fleet through that course.
This program is starting with 540 bikes. How large are you expecting this program to get?
Probably not a lot larger. This will actually give Lincoln Junior High 90 bikes, and they don't care. They'll find space if they have to. They believe in it that much. But, you know, we have a space issue here because of our growth. So we would even have more bikes if we could, but it's a space issue with us right now. I think we'll just be, you know, rotating them through all the PE classes.
So would you say the whole idea of this program is to try to get kids engaged into riding bikes?
Absolutely, and to get them comfortable with the trails and know how they can use the trails to go to school more, so parents won't have to drive them to school so often, because many of our trails hook right up to our schools. Because our trails are used a lot now, we want them to be safe on the trails when they pass people and help, you know, with the etiquette piece and to respect our trails. And our trails are so rich in learning opportunities, we want to give them that outdoor classroom as a fun alternative to learning.
All right, Mary, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Thank you for calling, and we appreciate it.
Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis filed that report last year. In honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we are reflecting back on some of the stories we've produced recently on service, services that are provided in our community.
I think one thing I'm proud of is it wasn't hard to come up with nominees for this show.
No.
Doing stories about nonprofits in all the communities in our listening area is kind of one of our missions.
I like doing it. I mean, it's a good way to help some of the nonprofits who, you know, when they have tight budgets as it is, and they're constantly working to raise money to keep them going so they can continue to provide the services that they do for the community. And oftentimes I think marketing isn't a huge part of their budget. And so I'm happy to help them with that part of it for them, that part of their job.
Well, there are a lot of them out there also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of different causes, and a lot of them you don't even realize exist or need assistance.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's safe to say an oxymoron is overstaffed nonprofit.
Right.
I don't think one exists.
No.
No, a lot of them are, you know, one-man bands.
Yes.
You know, they might have like a full-time executive director, maybe one other paid employee, and then a lot of volunteers.
The SAC lunch program that I went to last summer, it was a blistering hot day. That's part of St. John's Episcopal Church and other churches in Fort Smith, but it's run out of a building owned by St. John's. Zero paid people.
Mm.
And what they do with an all-volunteer staff of people from 15 into their 90s is amazing.
This is a lunch that was made today, all right? A meat sandwich, milk. One day a week we serve milk.
Twice today, volunteers have gathered in a building in downtown Fort Smith to prepare and hand out sack lunches to anybody who asks.
Now, milk is expensive. It's like buying gas. And so each week the price of the milk fluctuates, okay? So this is like gold here.
That's Gene Koljeski, one of the co-directors of the SAC Lunch program on 6th Street in downtown Fort Smith.
And they get a dessert, a sandwich, a drink, and they get fruit.
Before the year is over, more than 50,000 such lunches will have been given to people who just walk up to a door across the street from St. John's Episcopal Church. Last Thursday afternoon, Linda McDonough, Gene Koljeski, and Kim Pearson were putting meat, cheese, and mustard on bread and placing those sandwiches inside brown paper sacks. The lunches would be handed out the next day. Linda and Jean are two of the three co-directors of the program. Kim is a board member. Over the course of a month, the SAC Lunch program will have hundreds of volunteers preparing lunches in this room, then handing them out through a serving door. Jean Koljeski walks to a bulletin board in a hallway outside of this room and points to a picture of Mary Wise, a parishioner at St. John's Episcopal Church who started the program on her own, modestly, in 1986.
She would see hungry people outside the church because we have the bus station right over there, and it bothered Mary tremendously. So she started bringing Vienna sausage and crackers from home and serving the people, anybody that she saw. And as time went on, the priest from over there said, share your ministry with the church. So the church started to do this and started at St. John's, and so they supported it. It was like this little secret, and it was just St. John's who did this.
Since then, another 16 churches and organizations have become involved. Every Monday through Friday morning, free basic meals are given out for a half hour beginning at 8:30 and 11:30. Another meal is available Saturday mornings at 11:30. Kim Pearson, a board member and volunteer for the program, says in an effort to maximize resources, the lunch program only offers one meal over the weekend.
One thing that Jean is also very good at is finding other services that are available in town and not duplicating those services. And so there are a lot of churches that serve on Saturdays, and there are a lot more that serve on Sundays.
There is a fierce dedication among the directors to stretch limited assets as far as they can. The program is all volunteer. Nobody gets paid. Through grants, in-kind help, and donations, each meal costs only 63 cents to produce. Volunteers drive from Fayetteville and Oklahoma to help on their assigned days. Gene Koljeski keeps track of all of this on an elaborate color-coded sheet in the hallway.
This is my schedule.
It kind of gives you an idea. I have over 300 volunteers now who come through, and I really can't tell you how many volunteers I have because people bring their friends. Kim brings her whole homeschool group, which could be 20 kids that I don't even know about. But on my list, I have about 300 volunteers that I keep on my email list, and I send out monthly emails to. And this is how the calendar goes.
The precision of her planning is impressive. For today's date, August 28th, there is a notation that says, Bill Chandler, bananas.
Bill Chandler goes and picks up bananas from Sam's for me. Because we really feel good. We try to provide a nutritious lunch. So we serve fresh fruit with almost every meal that we serve. So he goes and he picks up 3 cases of bananas on Mondays from Sam's. If they have, and he'll first call the food bank. Because if the food bank has them, then we get them for free. If they don't have them, then we have to purchase them. So he goes to Sam's, picks up 3 cases of bananas, and brings them back. Usually he gets them here Tuesday morning so that I'll have bananas through here. Then I'm supposed to have another group right here to bring bananas to take us through to there.
Sandwiches and bananas and desserts are more needed now than any time in the SAC lunch program's history. Jean says there was a 28% increase in lunches given away between 2010 and 2011, and already this year more than 35,000 lunches have been made. She says since the economic plunge in 2008, more and more people have been showing up. On a calendar by the serving door is a somber scorecard of how much this program is in demand in Fort Smith. Each day of the month has several check marks, each one representing a lunch that was given to a child.
We never used to see kids stand in a line. It was rarity to see children. Then I started seeing more, and I thought, well, we need to keep, instead of me just saying, oh, we see a lot more kids. Well, now we track the children. And believe, you know, everybody, when they see it, they put it, or if they say that the lunch is for a child, then we put a tick mark here. So that gives us an idea of how many lunches are going for children.
And so it looks like today, the day we're talking, the 21st, there's 40 or so.
Yes. Now, in July, there was over 800, I think 890 lunches were served to children. So now here's the bread freezer over here. All right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Donated refrigerators line the wall in another room. A schedule guides volunteers to know when to transfer bread from the freezer to a fridge. And another refrigerator is the mustard. Mayo was dropped from the program to help stretch money a bit further. That sort of maneuver pays off. On days when the lunches include an orange, volunteers this year can put a whole orange in the sack instead of just half of one. The main operation here is to hand out lunches. But a line of folders along the hallway allows volunteers to help provide more information. One folder is labeled dental, another utilities. The sheets in the folders are lists of agencies that can help with each related subject. Kim Pearson says there's even a folder labeled laundry.
I love this laundry. West Ark Church of Christ, you can go once a month and they'll pay for the laundry service, like the coin-operated laundry. West Ark Church of Christ will do that. They'll also bring furniture. There's one. We need one for furniture.
11 times a week, the volunteers hand out the lunches with no forms to fill out or requirements to be met. Linda McDonough, one of the 3 co-directors, did ask people waiting in line this summer just a few questions to better track who the program is serving. 41% of respondents said they were unemployed, 12% said they're working, 17% disabled, 7% say they're homeless, 5% retired, and 18% are children. Kim Pearson says she and the other board members are constantly asking themselves how they can do better. And often, she says, difficult questions can lead to long conversations. One of those tough questions can be from a person in line asking for 2 lunches.
We've been instructed and talked about it over and over and over about just listening to your heart. What does your heart say? And the rule is that we ask them to go to the back of the line to make sure that everyone gets a sandwich before we give 2. Well, last month when I served, I think it was 110 degrees, and there was no one in the line. It was whether or not you give these 2 lunches. So the man came and he said, I'd like 2 lunches. I say, is one for a child, so we can count it. And he says, actually, they're just both for me. He says, it's just not enough. So we got to talking about the number of calories in that meal, and like, I have a 17-year-old son. That would not be, that's a snack, you know, for a 17-year-old son. So whether or not we could make the meal a few more calories in it, or whether we just go ahead and give 2 lunches to the big strapping guy. So we do. We just give him 2 lunches.
Kim says they've never run out of food. In-kind donations include all of the bread given by Mrs. Baird's Bread. Desserts are from Little Debbie's, and twice a week delivery of hot soup comes from the nearby restaurant Taliano's. St. John's Episcopal Church on North 6th donates the building space, utilities, and maintenance. There is a once-a-year Sack Lunch Sunday fundraiser, and many participating churches will sponsor an entire month. Linda McDonough says all of that reduces what should be the cost of a $1.08 per lunch to the 63 cents per lunch. And the regular volunteers, she says, make for a tight community of servers and recipients.
One time I was here, what was I doing? Maybe not making lunches, but doing something in the back, taking care of meat. And I could hear the person at the window distributing the lunches. And she was thanking them for taking the lunches. And I couldn't see, but I could hear what was going on. There's chemistry at that window, without a doubt. You know, people coming up, not to get a lunch, but to get some friendly interaction as well.
That story about the Sack Lunch program in downtown Fort Smith first aired last summer on Ozarks at Large.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville.
Bentonville.
Fort Smith.
Rogers.
Boonville.
And Lutherville.
Which we found is directly east of Clarksville.
Which means it's somewhat close to the Arkansas River.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Not the White River, as I mistakenly said last week. This was a special edition of an evening Ozarks at Large in honor of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, featuring stories of service, people doing service to their own community.
Yep.
Because that's what this day is all about. Is
that's right.
Providing service.
And the idea is if you do it one day, maybe you'll do it more than one.
Sure. I think it's always that first step, you know, getting out there. And maybe, you know, listening today, people got to hear about organizations they hadn't heard about before that they may want to get in touch with, which is also fun, too. I think there's lots of people out there that want to help and they want to do things. They just don't know how to get started or where to even start looking for organizations that could use their help. So hopefully this helps out that way as well, because it's
right.
Our service to the community.
Right, which we provide not just today, but throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And goodness knows, as many stories as we've done, we haven't done them all.
Oh, Lord, no.
No.
So perhaps there has been an organization that we have missed, one that you know of, one that you think is worthy of attention on our radio station or program.
You should let us know. You can email us at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Or we're on Facebook, too.
That's right. So just get a hold of us. And you can also email us by going to ozarksatlarge.com. Our individual emails are available there as well.
Yep.
Thank you both for taking time out on this holiday night to do a special edition of Ozarks at Large.
Of course.
Of course.
All right. Back to normal tomorrow, right?
Yes. Well,
what passes for normal for us. We'll have a brand new show tomorrow. You and I will be there.
Yes, we will.
Tuesday and Wednesday, and Christine, you and I will be back together on Thursday.
Yes.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Angela Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.